Yo, what's going on, everyone? Welcome to another dope episode of Creative Conversations, where we just have two artists get together and just shoot the shit for a little bit, get the vibe off each other. You know what I'm saying? Tonight, we have a very special guest. All my guests are special, but this one right here, the powerful, illustrious voice, the one who has the energy to make you laugh, the one that makes you vibe, the one that just brings good energy all around. Please give a warm welcome to the homie Dez. How you doing tonight?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I am well. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate you coming on the show.
Of course.
I know you're very, very busy, but you took a little time for little old me, so I appreciate that.
It's no problem. It's all good. I'm happy to be here.
For sure, for sure. Do me a quick favor and tell those people a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Dez, and I live here in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm originally from Indianapolis, but I am an artist here primarily. I sing, write, and I rap a little bit, but not too much.
Hey.
I also do a little bit of modeling and acting on the side. My degree is actually in theater performance, so all of that just kind of correlates together. But really anything that has to do with any type of creative process kind of grinds my creative gears, to say, I guess you can put it that way, like pretty much anything: painting, acting, singing, dancing, modeling. Hell, I'll roll down a hill if it was like part of a hack or a skit or something. So,
hey, you hear that, everybody? She is a jack of all trades. So, if you need her for something, she got you. She said, rolling down a hill. Come on, son. She's creative. You know what I mean? She'll make it look good. So, I remember us meeting. We were both working at the time. I was across the street from the job. We used to work at the mall.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember walking in and I saw your Scully. I believe it said like dope or selfie on it.
Yeah, it had selfie.
So I remember seeing that and I was looking, I was like, okay, who is this? And then I saw the selfie and I was like, yo, that's really dope. And I remember coming in and we spent my whole lunch hour just talking.
I do remember that. Yep.
Yeah. So we were just vibing, chilling. We saw each other a couple of times. And then a couple of weeks later, we shot together.
We did. Yep.
Yeah. So that was like our first real experience working together as creatives and collabing for a bit. And I must say, though that day was hot, it was definitely a very fun day. Had the whole crew out there and everything.
Yep, I did. I actually had one of my best friends come from Montgomery to style me for that shoot. It was the first shoot that I've ever done in Atlanta. So you're the first person to ever shoot me in the new city. And I still have a lot of those photos. It was a really dope shoot. And I remember you were like, well, I want to center it around that selfie Scully because that's just so dope. Mm-hmm. But the energy was good. It was very hot, but I think we did pretty good. We shot at like three different locations. So I had a good time. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Usually whenever we got together to shoot, it was always dope. And then the first shoot for sure was one of my favorites because it was so involved and we got to really get to know each other artistically. I think I was like 10 minutes late. You looked at me. You were like, why are you late? But it's all good.
I'm a very punctual person. So, yeah, I probably was like,
Nah. Yeah, I was just like, yo, let me make sure I get there. Let me get the first impression going, make sure it's all right. And then I was 10 minutes late and I was like, oh, no, I hope that we still shoot and have a good vibe. But we did. We ended up having
it was good.
So being that we got a chance to really explore who you were as a model at the time that we shot, I only got to see that side. But later on, I learned about your music. And really seeing you go in on your post on Instagram, tell me what kind of started you on your music career?
So actually, my father is a musician. And even though my mother doesn't like to call herself a singer, she can sing. So I just kind of grew up around musicians and singers and just music. Now, I grew up primarily around gospel music because that's just kind of what was played in my household. But as I got into choir and school and stuff, you know, we sang like Casey and JoJo and the Beatles. So the influence probably came from just my upbringing, honestly, between my parents and like the music that I would hear on the bus stop. And we would just kind of like make songs up at recess on the playground. And I was always the one to create the melodies. And I just kind of just stuck with me, you know. So I guess you could say I was born into it.
Okay, I feel that. I remember being in school doing stuff like that. I like to sing, but I'm not on the plane of you actually going out and pursuing it. I remember wanting to sing when I was in middle school and early high school, and I wanted to do that, and I thought it was definitely going to be the thing I was doing, and I love writing poetry and all that, and then I got behind the camera, and then everything just made sense for me.
Yeah.
So when I meet singers, I always am inspired because I do love music. I have such a love for music, but when someone pursues it and goes through the triumphs and challenges of making sure that you get your voice to be heard is always super dope and inspiring to me. You remind me of some middle school days. I wasn't creating melodies, but I did have two pencils and a table.
Oh, listen, that was it back then. And if you couldn't beat with those pens and pencils, you had to get up out the cafeteria. You had to get up, like, you just kind of had to get up, like, all right, you ain't got it, you ain't got it.
Yeah, I was definitely out there. I was going in. It didn't sound like scat like that. But at the same time, it was something dope. It was definitely a time to be alive as a kid, especially if you have love for music, because it broadened your outlook on life.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, you definitely. I mean?
And then you mentioned that you were singing Casey and JoJo and the Beatles. So you pretty much had a wide range of music that I'm guessing that really influenced you at the time.
Yeah, my middle school choir teacher, I always attribute her with like most of my my curiosity to go and explore other genres of music, because, you know, just like I said, we sang everything from Casey and JoJo to the Beatles to I remember singing Mr. Sandman, like, Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream. You know, that sounds from like the 20s or something like that. So maybe the 50s. But it's just, you know, she taught us those things and she just kind of showed us how harmonies, you know, are just have always been a thing. Like a lot of music can just correlate and come together. It's just about your ear and what you hear. And she was like, you know, the basis of music is pretty much the same. You have notes and melodies and harmonies, and that's the same across the board in any genre. And how they're placed is what makes them different, but that's always the base. And I think that just struck my curiosity. So then I just started trying to listen to everything I possibly could to see if I could find, you know, similarities between Prince and Michael Jackson, or if it was Earth, Wind & Fire and Frank Sinatra, or if it was Ella Fitzgerald and Chrisette Michele, you know. So I just started listening back and forth, and I was just like, wow, you know, music has just always been a way of communication across nations, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's just what made me so passionate about it as well, was just the fact that it was so universal, and it also just made people feel good. You know, it was cultural, it was social, it could have been, you know, could be political. So I just think knowing that those were all of the hats that music could wear made me that much more interested in it as a whole. So
I respect that. I dig that for sure. It definitely is a way of communicating. I remember my mom telling me, you're going to be able to get along with a lot of different people because of how much music you listen to and the different type of music you listen to.
Yeah.
And that's extremely true, because you could be pretty much a nomad in any setting. You don't have to be with people who just listen to hip hop or people who just listen to rock or whatever. Exactly. You can find a way to enter into those groups and at the same time pull something from each. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me ask this, though. Like, with you mentioning like Michael Jackson, Beatles and all, mm-hmm. would you say that they are some of your inspirations, or do you have like other people that you really pull from for inspiration as well?
I definitely would say Prince is probably a very big inspiration. I love Prince. I love the sound of his guitar. I love his lyrics, his melodies. Of course, we all love Michael. Michael's like, of course, that's the obvious choice. But Prince is probably like, and it's an odd mix of Prince and Frank Sinatra, if you can believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
Frank just had a smooth, velvety voice. And I really, really just like the way he, as the kids these days would say, rode the beat.
Yeah.
If I can say that, just the way he would glide across, like, you know, the drums and the horns. So those two artists, I think, primarily influenced my sound. Like, that's on my album. As far as a female vocalist, I would definitely say I try to fashion myself after, I would say, I guess, Ella Fitzgerald and Celine Dion. Those are two of my favorite female vocalists. And I've always looked to them for, like, vocal cues and kind of like, you know, the way they would carry their voices as well. I always loved how their voices sounded.
You know, that makes sense, though, because listening to your music and listening to your sound, you have power behind your voice. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And I think that's very distinct in your process versus just melodies. Because I know it's nothing wrong with runs. There's nothing wrong with melodies. But there's a real gift in power, because you definitely capture the attention of many people. We can be impressed. But then at the same time, with somebody who has a very loud, illustrious sound, you can definitely gain, like, garner more listeners, because they're like, man, we haven't heard this in a while. Like,
right.
That's the type of feel I get from your music. So Oh, no problem at all. We show appreciation on this show. I'm playing with me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But no, but let's go back with that, with Power, mm-hmm. with your inspirations. What does your process look like? Because I can only imagine that if you're in the studio, it's not simply just playing a track, but I can imagine you having the whole band behind you like they used to.
Honestly, okay, so there's a couple of things that can happen for me. Either I hear a melody in my head and I make like a voice memo on my phone and I'll send it to a producer I'm working with and be like, hey, you know, what do you hear on this? And he'll send me something back. Or I'll be in the studio with the producer and he'll, and I'm not one of those people that's like, well, play me some beats and let's see what you have. Like, I love to create organically. So if we're in the studio, I'll just be like, you know, have you heard any new sounds on your, you know, your Pro Tools or Ableton or whatever you're using, like, you know, anything you want to play with, and we'll go from that. I have actually never recorded with a band in the studio with me, but I have had people come in and play live instrumentation, like after I've laid the vocals down, and they kind of come in and they can hear what I'm singing and hear where I'm going, and they'll play behind that. A lot of my album, it's all live guitar and live bass and live keys. So the drums are usually the only programmed sound. And we just do that for like, you know, a more modern sound with like the 808s and the trap hits and whatnot.
Yeah.
But the rest of the instrumentation is usually recorded live straight into the recording system or program. And of course, my vocals are always live, of course. But when I perform, I always use a live band because it just feels so much better. And there's nothing wrong with people using tracks. I've been to shows where people use tracks and the vibe is good. That's usually for more like R&B or like hip hop kind of stuff. They use tracks. But for my music, having kind of like that pop sound and that live 80s synth sound, it goes over much better with a live band. And so I always use a live band.
Okay, I feel that. I definitely noticed that from different photos that I've seen, to sound checks, to I believe it was one of your performances you had one night, or you had like a green top. I remember you posted that a few times.
Yep.
And you had the whole band playing, and I can always appreciate shows that I would go to and having the live band play, because there's such a, how do you even describe it? It's such a real feeling, you know, and just like you said, anybody who's playing a track is fine. It's still fun. It's dope. It sounds good. But it's nothing like somebody playing the drums in the back, somebody who's on the bass, somebody right. who's on the guitar. And then you just step up on the scene to prepare to tell us a story, whatever story you want to tell from the music that you've written.
Yep. And that's how I feel, too. And I feel like you can feel the lyrics better, you know, if you do have those instruments live, and it gives the energy in the room just like a bit of a heightened sensation as well.
Yeah, for sure. It's a true human experience.
Yes, for sure. Definitely.
So when it comes to sound checks, when it comes to practicing with the band, do you go beat for beat, or do you sometimes improvise on stage as well, where it's like, hit me with the one time, bam?
It just depends. There have definitely been times where I've arranged, so usually whenever I do my sets, I arrange my band too. So the band will learn something, and then I'll come in and I'll say, okay, well, I want these hits right here because I'm going to do this on stage. Mm-hmm. But there have also been times where I'm on stage and I'm like, hey guys, you know, let's do this one more time. So there is a clip, I think the one you're referring to, where I'm actually covering Prince's How Come You Don't Call Me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I stop the band and I'm like, hey, I want to do this. And they just kind of follow me. But that's, you know, from us building trust between the musicians and the vocalists, and I use kind of the same band every time, so they know to look at me and I know to look at them. And if the energy in the room is like, you know, people are really feeling like a chorus or something like that, then I'll loop it again. I'll say, you know, let's just do it one more time and we'll do it again. Or if they're not, I can always say, hey, let's cut this short. So I would say it's just both. For the most part, I like to have things rehearsed, even if they are like special hits. I like to just have them rehearsed so they're clean. Mm-hmm. But there are, you know, certain times where I make, you know, break the band down and go a cappella on stage or something like that, or say, you know, hit me two times. And it's just all comes together when you have that type of relationship with your band where they trust that you're going to lead them and you trust that they're going to follow you.
Ah, that's facts. So you would say that you definitely take up a pretty significant leadership role as well as the singer and having your band to back you up, because sometimes we'll see like the some person singing and we're experiencing everything, but we don't really go into detail personally as listeners how involved you are outside of just singing.
Right. And I feel like, well, for me, I can only speak for myself. It should be seamless. You shouldn't have to look at that detail, and you shouldn't have to be like, oh, is she leading? You know, it should all it should all just kind of flow together. And that's, and again, that comes with that relationship and that trust that band members have with their vocalist, is that everything should be seamless, even if it's something that you didn't rehearse. You know, the experience that you create for your audience should be as close to perfect as you can possibly get it. Without it sounding, you know, too bland, but you just want your audience to be able to take this journey with you and to bring them into your world. And it's just like, they shouldn't, you know, have to say like, oh, you know, this sounds like it's a little off, or that, not quite sure if that was supposed to be there. They should just be able to smooth sailing, you know, smooth sail on the boat with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. I get that. Cruising, if you will. You
exactly. Hey. Okay, Smokey.
Come on now. I mean, I was going to be prepared having you on my show. You know what I'm saying? I can't be out here slacking. Together. You dig what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So let me ask though, when it comes to writing your music, I know that I have no real experience in writing music outside of being in school, trying to write some stuff and thinking I'm doing something without putting it out or anything. But when you're writing, you're really putting something in it that you've been practicing for years, and you're looking to promote and express that. What is the process when it comes to writing your music, getting it down, laying it down on the, in the studio, and then really performing it? What does that process look like for you?
It kind of varies. I think sometimes I write songs based on my personal experiences, and sometimes I write them just based on, you know, a word or phrase that may come to mind. So my top single that I actually perform now, this is the song that my band and I sing when I open up for artists. It's called Put It On Me. It's actually on iTunes and Google Play and Tidal, every, you know, all the streaming services. But I was just in the bathtub, and I don't even know how I started to remember about losing my virginity, but that's what I wrote the song about. I know, well, it's not the song's not graphic or in any detail, but you know, I just had that thought, and I just started singing this melody, and I had laughed to myself in the shower, and then I like literally hopped out the shower, just dripping wet, grabbed my phone, went to the voice memo, and just kind of like sang it into the mic to the microphone on my phone. And I laughed at myself because I was like, oh, you know, who would listen to something like this, like listening to that? And that's kind of how it happens sometimes. Like a voice memo is probably my best friend. A lot of the songs that I've written, I did voice memos of them first. And then, like I said, I'll either send them to a producer I'm working with and be like, you know, what do you hear behind this? And sometimes I already have an idea in my head of what I hear behind it. So with Put It On Me specifically, I went to the studio like that next day. I literally went to the studio the next day, and I said, I hear like, you know, Whitney Houston, 80s, like just boom, 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 you know. And he was just like, well, this. And we sat there for maybe 4 hours just going through sounds. And then I was like, you know what, let's just relay a beat down, and he'll give me the tempo and he'll give me the chords, which put me in the key. And I'll lay the vocals down first, because those are just always automatically in my head with all the harmonies, because I just hear the song. And then he'll build the track or the beat around that. And then boom. And then if we want to play it live, I take it to my band, and my band members are able to pick out their parts. So the guitar player can hear the guitar that's been played. The bass player can hear the bass part that's been played, and they listen to it and they learn it. And then we rehearse it, and then we put it on stage.
Hey, I love that process. Being in the bathtub, you know, your virginity, giggling at yourself at it. And you're like, you know what? This would be fire. Let me put this in a voice memo.
Yeah.
In a voice memo. Send it to your producer. Work, you said, for 4 hours?
We spent about 4 hours constructing that track.
Nice. And then you're like, hey, man, listen to this right quick. All right, we got you, Dez.
Yeah.
And they pick it apart. And they put it back together in their sound. And then next you know, you present it to us. I love that. That whole song has a story. And I got a chance to listen to the album from beginning to end. So hearing that, come on now. Yeah. Hey, I show appreciation on the show. That's what this is for.
I show appreciate you.
You know what I'm saying? I got you. So it's amazing how when, you know, as consumers, we hear the final product. Mm-hmm. It's very, I won't say it's rare, but you definitely don't have conversations with everyone, like everyday people per se, and be like, this song has a story. How right. can you break this down? Let's ask that question. It's more like, let's play it again. I like this song. This song is dope.
Right.
You yep. know, but being able to pick apart a song and then learning the origins of the song all the way here, is just, it's always super dope to be like, it came from that simple idea. That's yep. wild.
Sometimes it's deeper, and sometimes it's not as deep, you know, it just kind of really depends. I remember another song I wrote, was just driving by, and I saw a couple, I guess they were in an Uber, but they were in the back seat, and they just looked, you know, they weren't doing anything bad, but they were just like holding hands and kind of like mm-hmm. nuzzling each other's noses. So I wrote a song called Backseat Music, you know, and it's just about like, you know, two people kind of just holding each other in the back seat, and just, you know, it'll come from that. So it just really depends on how I'm feeling, or if I just see something and I'm inspired. But it's really as simple as kind of just either seeing something or remembering a memory and then creating the melody and then forming the words around that.
All right, bet. So that means while you're on the show, you're going to get inspired by our conversation.
Okay.
And, you know what I'm saying? And then you're going to be like, I talked about my first single and or another single here, and I talked about the album, and all of a sudden, boom, you're going to have a whole nother album based on this conversation. Come yeah, on now.
I receive it. And it's going to be called Single. The number one single is going to be called Now I'm Single.
There you go. Hey, like see, we're making magic here.
See? Who did? So,
now, we're talking about albums.
Mm-hmm.
Your album, Cardigan.
Yes.
First of all, before we even get into the meat and potatoes, as they say here in the South,
mm-hmm.
what was the inspiration for the name of the album?
So there was a period of time in college where I wore cardigans every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't know what I was going through. You know what it was? I saw an ad that Andre 3000 posted. He was creating this fashion line for gentlemen, and it was giving like Polo Ralph Lauren vibes, but it was like very debonair black 20s collegiate male. And they all wore these cardigans with like their letters on the, you know, front pocket and whatnot. And I don't know, I just really liked it. So I went out and bought like 14 cardigans. I don't even know what I was going through.
Wow.
But I just really liked cardigans. Like, it was always like, oh, that girl with the cardigan. And so actually one of the songs that's not even on the album, but that I started writing for the album, I started writing the album back in 2011, if you can believe it.
Yeah.
So I started writing it back then and called it Cardigan. And I was like, well, whenever I release this album, I'm going to call it Cardigan, because this is when I started working on it. And I was like, it's just going to show my journey through me writing these songs for however many years it takes for me to write the album. And that was the inspiration behind that. And I spelled it with a K, because at the time, my artist name was Kana. That was back then. And I spelled that with a K. So I was going through a whole K thing as well. But so I just kept it. Like, whatever it was at the time, even though I didn't release it until, you know, a couple of years ago, I kept it. I kept it with a K. So it's Cardigan with a K. And the Y from Cardigan, because, you know, Cardigan's originally spelled with an I.
Right.
And I was like, well, I don't want any I's in there, because it was a group effort. And at the time, I was just really like in this bonding thing with my producers. And I was like, I'm going to put a Y instead of an I, because there's no I in team. And I don't know. Hey, I was just really into it. Yeah. I was young. I was 21. Like, I was really into it. And I just kept it that. I kept it that, even though a lot of the songs changed and some of the original songs aren't even on the album.
Mm-hmm.
Just to stay true to my process and to stay true to the passion that I had when I first started writing the album, I just kept the name.
You know, I dig that heavy, because that I didn't know it was going to be that deep. That was from the K to four. That's really specific how many cardigans you purchased.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at you, though. No, I'm not. No, I made the decision. I'm not mad at you, because you're an individual.
Listen, we all go through time periods where we have that one section of our lives where it's like, I don't know what I was going through, but.
Right. I'm going to still be going through mine, because I still wear black like crazy.
Well, that's all right. That is okay.
Oh, yeah,
that's course. Your thing.
You know,
that's your shit.
Exactly. Black is beautiful.
Yeah, ain't it?
From the Y in cardigan to having 14 cardigans to, you know, no I in team. I can definitely say that you're dedicated.
Yeah.
You're also dedicated to your sound. The sound on your album changed up just a bit, like around the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got hit with the first couple songs, especially Kryptonite, it was, very 80s inspired.
Oh, for sure.
You know what I mean? To the Zappin' Rogers reference in the end of the song.
Yeah. So
I felt that. Do you feel like you were born in the wrong decade? Do you feel like the 80s was the decade?
I don't know. No, I feel like I was born in the right decade. I think that I just really loved the freedom and the newness of the sounds of the 80s. I felt like everyone was really looking for like a futuristic, you know, just different types of, a lot of different instruments kind of came out and different sounds came out in the 80s. And I think for musicians, especially Black musicians, that was really new. And they were just like, oh, and the 80s just had such a distinct, like a super distinct sound because everyone wanted that newness. And I just really appreciate it because it's so familiar. So it's like, as soon as you hear it, you know exactly what decade that came from, you know? So there's no contemplation or no like, this kind of sounds like something that's kind of, oh, this sounds like the 80s for sure. And I actually was able to get a clearance on sampling a bit of Prince's When Doves Cry on one of my songs on my album. So that was actually pretty cool.
That's dope.
Yeah, it's actually on the song Puppet in the very beginning. I do his like,
Is that what that was?
Yeah, that's what that was. That's what that is.
Hey,
so okay. We had to get two clearances. We had to get a clearance on that. And we have the Pinocchio song. So we had to go through Disney to get a clearance on Got No Strings to Hold Me Down to Make Me So.
I picked that up for sure. Puppet was actually pretty dope. I really like that song.
Thank you.
Yeah, it definitely had it definitely changed up the tune and the rhythm there, and then you were able to kind of like tell a story. It's almost like what was it? It was Vanity and The Last Dragon, and it was like Never Say Never. Like that's the kind of vibe I got from that song
for sure. Those were definitely Vanity 6 for sure was the influence, of course, with Prince being like one of my favorite artists. Anyone that was under him, all his proteges were all my, you know, people I look up to as well. But yeah, I don't think I was born in the wrong decade. I think I just have such a great appreciation for the 80s. And I really just like the music from that time. Because they can have the makeup and the hair. They can keep that. But I'll definitely take some of the fashion and the music.
Nah, you know you want Sheila E. style. Stop playing with me.
Oh, no, thank you. Not enough hairspray in the world.
No. So I definitely have an affinity for the 80s myself, but it's more or less for hip hop.
Okay. Yeah.
So Run DMC, I'm talking Fat Boys. Like one of my favorite 80s movies is Crush Groove.
Okay. Yeah. For sure. Yeah.
So I definitely have an appreciation for 80s music. My mom, that was like her decade. So I got a lot of inspirations from watching like Purple Rain and other like 80s movies, even from the classic 80s movies like 16 Candles.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. And so when it comes to hearing the 80s, it was simplistic to a degree where they just told their stories and had a good time. It was a party.
Right. It was definitely a party. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Some of it was political. Like hip hop really garnered the huge attention, like going into like early mid 80s. And then when it came to the sound of R&B had a distinct sound. Pop had a distinct sound, but it all worked together, like you said, because everybody wanted to do the next new thing.
Right. Yep.
So the 80s has like story after story. If you were to describe yourself as a story, like a historian in the 80s, what would you describe your story to be?
Oh, wow. Young girl takes life too seriously and then one day just says fuck it and then goes and does music instead and then follows her heart and follows her passion and does music instead and surprisingly is able to make a career out of it.
Nice.
I definitely was going to law school. That's what I was going to do. I was going to be a defense attorney. I know.
Okay.
I was going to be a defense attorney. You could not tell me I wasn't going to be someone's lawyer. Like I just knew in my heart that's what I was going to do until I don't even know what triggered the light bulb in my head that was like, but what are you passionate about? What could you wake up every day and say, you know what? I love doing this. I love that I can do this. And it was music. And that music has always been a part of my life. I've always been good at it. I've always been passionate about it. But, you know, when you're younger, your parents want you to be a doctor or a lawyer, you know,
of course.
They want you to have a real, a quote unquote, real job. And I think for millennials, and I'm an elder millennial, I think we were the generation that kind of, you know, spearheaded that turn where it was like, no, we're going to take our passions and turn them into careers, even if we have to work for ourselves. Like, we're not going to just follow the blueprint of our, you know, the our generation before us and just trying to have corporate jobs all the time. We're going to go ahead and follow some passions here.
For sure. Because, I mean, back in the day, it was, especially for us, it was more or less, this is like how what we have to do to survive. There isn't really much out here for us. And so you had to pretty much be like an anomaly back in the day.
Exactly.
And being in our age now, we are in the sweet spot of learning technology and being introduced to technology in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And because we got into the sweet spot where it doesn't really leave us just yet, because we can catch up, because we were steadily learning and growing within technology and seeing the opportunities that are coming up. That's why you have people in their 30s and 40s doing things on YouTube and Twitch and going for their passions, because they're such an eye-opening market for it now.
Right. Yep, you know? I totally agree. Yep.
So I'm definitely not mad at it, outside of some of the old ideologies having digest. Like, you don't have a good job, you ain't gonna make it.
YouTube, right. Exactly.
What is that?
Right.
Career? That's what it is.
For sure.
So when it comes to exploring your passion or really living your passion, it's definitely a staple to the people who were saying, nah, that's not really going to happen for us. So you are definitely setting the stage for more people to continue to succeed. So you're making history.
Oh, thank you. Wow. That's intense. No pressure. Okay.
No pressure at all. You just continue to do what you do authentically and it's all going to follow suit.
Yeah, I believe that.
You know what I'm saying?
For sure. Yeah.
So let me ask, the very first time that you performed any of one of your songs on your album, what was that like for you to really have that going for the very first time?
It was a little nerve-wracking and exciting. It was more exciting than nerve-wracking just because it's like, you know, you're going to a show. I performed my first songs for my album at a Music Room, which was an event space here in Atlanta before it got shut down. It's no longer there, but
yeah.
That's where I did my first show in 2017. And I know the people who knew me would know the songs, but there were some people who were just, you know, there to see a live show. And you always, in the back of your mind, you're like, okay, this isn't going to be like a Beyonce concert where she can hold the mic up and everybody's just going to sing your song to, you know, 14 bars. It's just, you know, some people might just sit there and be listening for the first time. And so you have to prepare yourself for all types of reactions to the music. You know, will people dance? Are they going to sing along to the lyrics? Are there people here who I just don't know who have heard of me? Can I actually sing this live? Like, because you're in a studio, you can start and stop and you can add all the bells and whistles in the studio. But when you're doing it live, that is it. You are doing it live. You know, are my musicians going to remember these hits that I put in here? Do I have background singers? Should I dance? Should I stand still? So there's just a lot that goes into a live performance, because you want it to be visually pleasing. You know, you want the sonic aspect of it to be, you know, on point and good. So it was nerve-wracking. It really was nerve-wracking. I was a ball of nerves up until maybe the third song. Even the first thing in the first two songs, I was like, okay, y'all, and here's my next song. And it's just like, do people care? Do they care about the dialogue in between songs? You know, mm-hmm. I wrote this song about losing my virginity, so here it goes. You know. But I was very excited, just because even though it was a small feat, that is something sometimes that people dream about, you know, writing their own music and being able to perform it in front of people. Some people never get that opportunity. So I'm very fortunate that I had people who believed in me to say, you know what, hey, yeah, like, let's do this. And people actually came out. I was very surprised, but people actually came out. So, you know, the experience was nerve-wracking, exciting, and rewarding.
Hey, I mean, if you work hard, you can sleep easy, right?
And that's very true.
So I definitely like that story. I mean, I look at your situation like Bernie Mac's situation on Def Comedy Jam. I don't know if you're familiar with that story.
No, I don't think I'm too familiar.
Okay, so I remember watching the scene recently, actually. And before he got on stage, there was a comic that got booed.
Oh, wow.
And so he said he went to the DJ and he was like, hey, yo, you know, X, Y, and Z, whenever I do this, X, Y, and Z. First thing he came on stage, first thing he said, I ain't scared of you motherfuckers. That was the very first thing he said. And like, you were like, oh, snap, you know, and then he just had all these jokes. And, you know, it's different things like that. And he'd be like, kick it. And then the DJ would come in, boom, boom, boom. And
I do remember seeing those clips, yeah.
Yeah, so that's the story behind it. Like, he was like, nah, y'all ain't going to boo me off stage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, for sure. I feel that all the way.
So it's kind of, right. So it's kind of dope to hear your story and be like, should I do this? Should I do not? Fuck it. I'm just going to do it.
Yep.
And then you came out and you rocked the show. So it's always good to have another pioneer in the game be able to tell that same type of story and then succeed to tell the story today.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Now, being that that process was nerve-wracking for you at first and then became rewarding later, I know this might be kind of a funny question, but you might be able to relate to it. Were you able to sleep after that?
Oh, I slept good. Yeah. It was the week leading up to the show that I did not have sleep, but right after the show, oh, I ate like, at the time I was still eating red meat, so I had this huge cheeseburger and fries and I had a beer, and I slept the best I had slept in maybe a month or so since doing rehearsals and stuff for the show. I slept so good.
That's great. That's great, because I know me, I usually get the jitters and then I fall asleep right after. So I'm so hyped. Yep. God, I can't believe that happened. That's so catching Z's.
Yep, left it all on the stage and went right into bed.
Nice, nice. Now let's see. Let's go ahead and segue into more of your talents here, because we cannot sleep on your modeling. Yeah, I know you like that. I know you like that. So we definitely had some good times together for sure. Shooting, it was always good energy. It was always a dope playlist. You're welcome, because I know you were vibing every time we shot. Especially
that's
last
very
time.
True. You were right. I cannot. Yeah. So, it's funny to hear people call or to call me or to refer to me as a model, because I don't see myself as one. Mm-hmm. I think I have people who just like my energy and maybe like what I post and are just like, you know what? Yeah, I would like to do something creative with you. And, you know, a lot of times it does turn out to be photography. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I guess I am easy on the eyes. Once I look at the photos, I'm like, oh, okay, that actually did turn out really well.
Okay.
But I don't necessarily ever market myself as a model. I never put that like link in my bio or anything like that.
Right.
I do like doing it just because it's something creative. So I love doing everything, but I never put myself out as a model, but I absolutely love being in front of the camera. And I think just in any aspect, I love it. So in a still image, it allows me to be a little bit more intimate with myself, really. It's something that I do for myself. It's something that I find confidence in doing, because it's something that I don't necessarily think I'm the best at. You know, I wouldn't call myself a professional model or anything like that, but I do find confidence when I see the results from, you know, photographers taking those stills of me. I'm like, oh man, okay, yeah, this makes me feel good. I feel like I look all right. That's all right.
Hey, I like that. No, I mean, that's true though, because I was taught that it's 70-30, right? From an old mentor of mine, 70% is, 30% is what I have to do to set the shot. 70% is what you give me.
Yeah.
So, wow, you know, okay, you do most of the work and I'm just the guy with the camera being able to capture, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So with that, I remember, like I said, our very first time shooting, like we said before, it was very involved. And we shot two more times after that. I remember it was like at a park. You had more of like a 90s feel.
Yep.
Like we shot the rings. You had the bandana on. It was very baggy, very urban, very cool. And you were able to pull that off very well. And I think I pulled from your personality, because though we like to have fun and, you know, you can be really silly here and there. You throw jokes and stuff. You're really chill.
Yeah.
So we were able to capture that. And then I remember the next time I want to get a little more of that intimate side.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did like the oversized t-shirt, well, the oversized like
button-up shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got a chance to do that and really kind of play with colors and everything like that. So I think that you're more versatile when it comes to, because of like your look and because of your attitude, I think that it's easy to put you in certain situations that might accentuate, you know, the jaw or my accentuate your form and different things like that. Or like I said, you have the personality that really resonates with people. So I think that with that comfortability, it's easy to say, hey, let's shoot this and then we can just have fun with it, because you're very easy to work with.
Oh, thank you. You're easy to work with as well.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, I've never felt really any pressure with doing any shoots with you or anything like that. Everything, like you said, just kind of came with the vibe of whether you were playing like a dope playlist or whether we were just kind of talking and laughing. And yeah, just the surroundings that we were always in was just always so calm and peaceful. So I never felt pressured or felt like, you know, oh man, I just, you know, there's so much weighing on this. It was always just very lax. And lax just meaning in the vibe, not so much the effort and the work. But yeah, I've always felt a good vibe.
Now, for sure. Now, you don't have to lie to me.
Okay? Oh my gosh.
It would be nice to say that I was like, you know, our shoots were your favorite, but it don't have to be. Cause I know one of my favorites was the one that you did in the gas station. That was pretty dope.
Oh wow, yeah.
Yeah. So what was like one of your favorite shoots that you've done?
Actually, our shoot, the one we did in the park, was one of my favorite ones to date, when I had like the red hair and the denim on denim.
Mm-hmm.
I love those photos, especially the black and whites. I think I've gotten the most compliments on those photos as well. Like, people love those. And I love them too, because they really show a lot of my more chill side. Like when I'm on stage performing, I have so much energy and it's just like, ah, la, la. And when I do my comedy, it's like, ah, la, 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 la. But sometimes I think you capture the essence of like my calm. And so that's probably one of my favorite shoots. And then the shoot that I did for my album artwork was probably another one of my favorites. It was a very eclectic piece. So I think that was probably, those two are probably like my favorites.
Good deal. First of all, hey, y'all heard that? My shoot was first before the album shoot. The album shoot was dope. Don't get me wrong, but you know, as they say, give me my flowers.
Yeah, give them to them.
You know what I'm saying? Nah, just...
Yes.
Nah, that shoot was really fun. And I remember, again, we always shoot on a hot day.
We always do shoot on hot days. I don't know what it is with you in the sun, but I think that's also a really good play off my skin. The sun just always kind of like reflects pretty well off of that, so...
Okay. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Flex on them right quick.
I mean, I'm just saying, you know, when you're chosen, I'm part of the chosen people.
Hey.
The sun is good to you.
I feel it. No, I remember that feel of that shoot was a chill vibe, dope vibe, very 90s feel. And I just remember some of the poses that you did and some of the, for example, it was the one where your hand was on your neck and your head was tilted and then your body had that curvature. I remember really liking that photo.
Yeah.
It accentuated your body at the same time. You let the clothes hang to really be free flowing. And at the same time, you showed a little bit of your ab work. So, you know what I'm saying? So you're literally flexing on them. So
literally,
it was definitely something really cool, to where it was like a sexy vibe, but at the same time, it wasn't too much. So it definitely gave you a Leah for sure.
Yeah.
And I think one of my first experiments with just capturing just the rings, because I wanted to play with like the blur in the back. Mm-hmm. You were like one of the first people I did that with. And I thought that was
super cool.
And I thought that was different, because I think we spoke about jewelry.
Yes. And my rings are a very big part of me. So, yeah.
So I saw that and I was like, oh, that's going to be dope. And I thought about it. And I was like, maybe I can just do something like focusing on the hands. And I've only done that a few times. I would love to do that more.
Yeah.
And I just thought that mess was just really cool. So, I mean, low-key, we might just do a shoot where we just capture and just hand movements.
You just let me know. I got these tattoos on here now, so.
Oh, yeah, word? Oh, we can definitely do that. Hey, see, we setting up shoots. We writing albums. It's a whole collaboration.
It's a whole collab.
All right. Now, speaking of collabs, you've done certain collabs with some pretty popular people in regards to your acting. I remember going to the Emmanuel Hudson sketch show that you guys did.
Mm-hmm.
A few years ago, and that's when we actually reconnected.
Yep, I remember.
So I got a chance to see you like do a live performance there. You've also done a skit with like Country Wayne. I remember seeing that a while back.
Yeah.
And some of my favorites are it's like the skits where you're like either dating a black girl or you're like really sad about your privilege being challenged.
Yeah.
But when you started, you always do like a song reference. And I think one of my favorites was Annie. I loved that.
That was one of my favorite ones too. That video is probably like in my top five.
Oh,
like, hi guys, what's up? My name's Annie. But when my name's Annabelle, but my friends call me Annie.
Annie, because I'm okay.
I'm okay.
Like, when it came, like when it comes to those characters that you pretty much set, and it, I mean, you're still doing even more things now when dating certain type of men and different things like that. You have like the soundbite playing. How do you channel that and create those characters for those skits?
So, I mean, honestly, I'm from Indiana. So, I mean, all of those girls are girls that I went to school with, you know. So,
yeah.
It was really just the jokes just write themselves. I written out a lot of those jokes that I tell in my comedy videos are things that really have either have happened or like I've seen happen. And I don't know. It's just it happens so often that I'm just able to emulate it. And of course, the song references just come from me being such like a music head. And right. A lot of people are like, oh, how long does it take you to write these skits and whatnot? And I'm going to be 100% honest with y'all. When I tell y'all, I just freestyle these skits and like I just record them. It just comes out and people are like, but how? And I'm like, I don't know. I just talk. Like I get on there and I start talking. And when I'm done saying what I have to say, I end the video and I'm like, oh, okay, you know. But a lot of people are like, how long does it take you to write these and how often, blah, blah, blah. I literally wake up sometimes and I'll think of something in the shower. It often happens. It's something about being in that bathtub in that shower. And I start laughing and I'm like, oh, I need to record that when I get out. And I'll just get out, put my clothes on. Mm-hmm. And I like recording outside because like the sun gives like the best light.
Yeah.
And I just say it. And sometimes I'll freestyle. And there have been times where I laugh and I have to do the video over because like I laugh at myself while doing it. But yeah, like the jokes really write themselves just based off of my life's experience.
Oh, for sure. No, you know, that's fun. And I'm glad they're authentic stories too, because it makes it even funnier. I'm surprised that I haven't seen you on TikTok, Loki. And I live on TikTok. It's a problem.
I'm definitely on TikTok. And most of those videos are on TikTok as well.
Why aren't they on my feed?
I don't know. Do you?
I'm really upset now.
That's crazy. You know you don't follow me. Don't try to act like, no.
You know I gotta follow you. Yeah, because I
follow me now.
Because I've seen them on Instagram. So that's why I know. Yeah. And I thought you were only posting on there. And I think at the time I saw those, I didn't have TikTok yet.
Okay.
So now that I'm like on TikTok like crazy, I definitely got to make sure I go in and show love on those, because I'm like, I should be seeing these in my feed.
Yeah. And my name's the same on TikTok as it is on IG. So it's not just Dez on TikTok as well.
All right, cool. Hopefully I'm cool enough to follow back, because you know.
Oh my gosh, whatever.
Y'all be out don't here. Even. Y'all be so busy. You
don't
know?
Even. Don't even. Mm-hmm. I got you. Say less. Say less. I got you.
Facts. So let me ask, when it comes to acting, have you been putting more energy into it a little bit, or have you been focusing more on the music and then just, you know, doing the skits as they come?
So actually this year, the band that I sing in, we have been opening up for some major artists and we've been going on these tours. So I do the comedy videos when I can now, but I'm so busy in rehearsals and on shows that the music is kind of taking precedence right now.
Mm-hmm.
But when I can do them, or if I just have something that's in my mind that's just really funny, I do post them, but they're not as frequent. Like I used to do them like every other day.
Yeah.
But now they've slowed down a bit because I wake up and I'm like, oh, I gotta go to rehearsal. So it's just like, you know, it's slowed down a bit, but as soon as I get some more free time, they're probably going to spark back up, because I have a whole new concept about being on the road and on tour. So
hey, now I will say this, let's go back to the music for just a second, because you mentioned that you have been on tour. I've seen you travel like crazy. I've been living really got vicariously through you, and I know sometimes you take your family with you, like your mom and your sister, y'all just driving. Let me ask, how has that been? Because I know that doing things domestically can be dope and familiar, but like going to other countries and performing, or just going to just, I don't know, maybe even just a different state. Let's even go domestically. Just getting out of Atlanta for a second. How has that experience been for you?
I mean, that's almost been my entire experience. I very, very, very rarely perform in Atlanta, and it's just, there's not a personal choice. I just get booked more outside of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, almost every week being in a different state, or sometimes two states in 1 week or two states in a day. The manager that I have takes very good care of us. So we, you know, travel on our tour bus and we have hotel accommodations. So I never feel like, oh, I'm just so, you know, not well rested or anything like that. Keeping my voice, like making sure my voice holds up, is probably the biggest thing with traveling. you know, just between the weather changes, because there's weather changes in different states, mm-hmm. getting really good sleep, you know, because sometimes you're excited after a show and you want to go out and you want to celebrate and, you know, not talking and not eating red foods, like all the stuff that it takes to actually make sure your voice is at its pinnacle position to perform is probably the most stressful part of touring and traveling versus like the actual traveling aspect.
Oh, got you. Yeah, again, one of those things that you do not think about when it comes to people traveling outside of just sleep. I know sleep is very important, but I mean, just making sure that you're not eating the wrong foods is really interesting.
Oh, yeah, because you don't want that acid reflux. You don't want indigestion because, like, you can't poop on tour buses. So you have to make sure that whatever you eat, no, you have to wait till, like, you get to, like, a rest stop or a hotel, but you cannot poop on tour buses. So you have to really... And like me, I'm a pescatarian, so I eat a lot of vegetables. Like, I love vegetables and a lot of fish. And you know, those vegetables, that's a lot of fiber. It's like, you have to kind of make the tough decision. Like, okay, am I going to go on like a liquid diet so I'll just pee it out? Or like, am I going to try to get some solid foods and hope for the best?
Oh, it's like next Friday, right? Like your pops in the truck, you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Got the bubble guts and you can't do nothing about it.
Don't eat no breakfast burritos and you'll be fine.
Oh, man. I could only imagine. Again, we got to stop, eh? Want to be a little late to the show?
Yep, it's crazy.
So let me ask this then. I mean, with everything that you have going on, it seems like it's just coming your way tenfold, which is so, so dope. What is next for you? What's the next big move that you see yourself going in?
I'm actually working on another EP. So the next thing will be to have that released. And that's going to be a totally different sound. So I'm very nervous because I'm nervous about how it'll be received, I guess, with it being so different from the whole 80s pop sound that I did on the first album. So that's that. And I've also started my own vocal coaching business.
Oh.
So looking to get that up and going and going full throttle. I've only had like a couple of students so far, but I'm looking to have that kind of going full swing, hopefully by like the middle of next year. So maybe take myself off the road a little bit. And yeah, those are the two big things that I have coming up.
All right. Well, you know, if you need promo photos, you know, I got you.
I already know who to call. I'm already knowing.
You know what I'm saying? Because y'all heard it first. My shoot was mentioned first. So I'm sorry, everybody.
I say it loud and proud.
Hey, see, I love it. Des, with everything that you have going on, from the body of work that you have, that you've been able to bless our ears with, from the power that you have in your voice that you allow us to bestow, your talent upon us to hear your story and to have a funky sound from the 80s, and then what you're looking to plan to do more with your next EP, with the skits that you definitely bring us joy with, I definitely appreciate you for coming on the show. You are a real one.
Oh, for sure. I wouldn't miss it. I would not miss it.
Do me a favor. Tell the people they can find you.
So on TikTok and Instagram, you can find me at Nah Just Dez. That's NahJussDez. If you're looking me up on YouTube, you can just put in Desiree Dez. That's Dez with a Z. So Dez Gaston, Gaston. You can find all of my music on there. And that's pretty much, I'm actually not on Twitter or Snapchat.
Good for you.
So those are the three, the top three socials that you can find me on. If you type in capital Dez and Cardigan spelled Cardygen, in Apple Music, Tidal, or Spotify, or Google Play, that's where you can find my album. And I believe my EP, my first EP that I did, is on there as well under the same name. So all of my music is listed under that.
And you heard it here, y'all. Make sure y'all go on to Apple Music, wherever you can find your music, Spotify, and make sure that you hit that follow button on her to keep up with her music and then have a good time going back in time listening to her sound.
Yes.
Thank you again, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Creative Conversations with your boy Blair, but we're friends, so call me Brock. Until next time, stay blessed and definitely stay creative. Peace.